Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Starting in 2017, the state of Minnesota will ban the use of an antibacterial chemical in consumer products. And Melissa Benmark is here to tell us more. What's going on, Melissa?
Well, this is something I'm kind of following right now, and it's definitely kind of in the emerging stages of being a story. But the chemical triclosan, some people say triclosan, has been found in the waters and fish of the Great Lakes, and a number of health organizations in Canada are urging their government to ban the chemical as well. And yesterday there was an article in Bloomberg that looked at the process of how triclosan is considered for use in some brands of toothpaste. It's a fairly complicated article, but I wanted to get some highlights of it. So I spoke to the author, who is Tiffany Carey.
It's been around for a very long time, and it was first in surgical hand scrubs, but it's gotten into, you know, a lot of other products, deodorants, toothpaste, cosmetics. And so there are several concerns. I would say the oldest one is probably the antibacterial resistance. People have been talking about that for longer. But more recently, you see a lot of studies coming out about whether it is an endocrine disruptor. So that involves, you know, affecting the thyroid and the hormone system and all the things that go into that, like fertility and child development. Also, just a really broad range of other concerns that scientists have been looking into, like affecting muscle contraction or muscle function, promoting cancer cell growth. So there's quite a vast range.
So your story in Bloomberg looked at how information about the chemical was handled by the FDA and kind of the interaction between them and Colgate-Palmolive. Kind of give us the setup of what you were trying to find out here.
Sure. Well, I think the story started with a very basic question, which is why is this in toothpaste when it's being taken out of all these other products? And also, Colgate-Palmolive had taken it out of its soaps in 2011, in its antibacterial soaps. So I started looking at how it got into toothpaste in the first place. And, you know, Colgate would often use that on its website and in conversations as a reason that it had this very thorough FDA approval. And so what I found is that, you know, there's a risk-benefit analysis that's done. And when you look at this in soaps and other products, people seem to be finding that the benefit was not so clear. That's one of the reasons the FDA has cited for why it's reviewing its use in hand soaps. But with the Colgate Total toothpaste, it really was documented as part of that 1997 approval and in a bunch of other studies that it's very effective at fighting plaque and gingivitis. So while the risk side remains kind of unclear for both, there's this clear benefit in the toothpaste.
It sounded like the usual thing about having industry pay for studies on itself kind of came into play here somewhat. Can you talk about that?
Well, what we see with the documents that Colgate submitted to the FDA is that, yes, you know, these were all studies that were done either by Colgate or by, it seems like, the original maker of the chemical, which was a company called Ciba Geigy, and then it became BASF. And there may have been other sponsors of the studies, too. It's not entirely clear. So that obviously raises some questions, although people argue that, you know, university scientists have their own motives. When they do studies, they're looking for things that are wrong, or, you know, they're trying to get tenure and have a controversial result. But when you look at all of these studies, you know, there's definitely a lot of them that show that there are links to potential health problems.
If I understand it right, one of the things that you were looking at was why some of the studies were not made available to the public by the FDA. Is that right?
Yes. So, you know, for over 17 years, these studies weren't available. And there was a public health advocate that had tried to FOIA them. And that's Freedom of Information Act, filed the Freedom of Information Act to try to get a hold of them. And had failed, and so they had brought a lawsuit. And so the FDA agreed to release the documents as part of the lawsuit. And the FDA said it was its own decision to keep them from the public just because there had been a third party who had done some of the studies, and that was their standard policy, that when a third party had been involved, it wouldn't publish these documents.
Why would that be? I mean, I can't.
It's hard to say. Often there's an argument about something being commercially sensitive that competitors wouldn't be wanted to know that information.
So like industry secrets kind of thing?
Right. a lot of scientists I spoke to said that this kind of information is not typically in that category, though. So it does seem quite strange to several people.
So you did check this with some scientists, and what did they have to say about it?
They pointed out that there seemed to be not a lot of information about how the studies were designed, and that the studies showed some effects that certainly through the lens of today's science would raise a lot of concerns. For example, there were developmental issues in the fetuses of mice and rat pups where the mother had been exposed to triclosan. And the way the studies were reported, they said, well, this is the result of a maternal toxic effect, not a fetotoxic effect, kind of distinguishing that the chemical seemed to be acting on the mother rather than the fetus.
Mm-hmm.
And the scientists just said, well, that's not a very valid reason to dismiss the issue.
So you're saying that Colgate didn't find that to be a valid argument? I'm not quite following that part.
The dismissal is just very blunt. It just says at the end of the study that this was an effect on the mother, not the fetus, and that's how the study kind of concludes.
Has Colgate-Palmolive responded to the story as of this interview, which I know it's pretty early on here?
Well, they responded to several questions while I was reporting the story. So there's certainly been a dialogue already.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot to say in favor of the chemical being in this toothpaste. Gingivitis and plaque are an issue. I guess periodontal disease can be quite serious. And so, you know, they're saying that compared to the use of this chemical in hand soaps, there's quite a good argument for it to be in toothpaste, and that it does head off a fairly serious health concern that affects a lot of people.
The state of Minnesota recently banned the chemical, and some organizations, health and environmental organizations in Canada, are urging Canada to ban it too. It's been found pretty significantly in the Great Lakes. Do you think that your story will have any kind of effect on the debate over this chemical?
It's hard to say. I think environmental concerns are almost a whole other range of problems. I didn't get into that very much in the story just because it is a very different issue, but I noticed in my reporting that in response to the FDA's kind of request for public comment on whether or not it should ban this in hand soaps, that there were some people who weighed in from a wastewater treatment agency just saying, you know, this is very much an issue in the environment. In fact, in wastewater treatment plants, it seems to be disrupting the way that normal bacteria process the waste, and suggesting that there could be some problems as the water exits the wastewater treatment plant and the solids from the plant get put back into things like soils.
So what did you see to be some of the legal issues surrounding this story?
That's a difficult question. There are several lawsuits out there about this chemical, triclosan, being in products such as deodorant, where the lawsuits claim that they were sold a product that was supposed to be either natural or supposed to be more effective than other products, and they're saying that was false advertising and they'd like their money back. So there are some class action lawsuits evolving in those areas. I don't think that in the toothpaste we're going to see that kind of legal issue, because it's a very different situation here. No one has said that this doesn't have a clear benefit in toothpaste. And when it comes to the risk side of the analysis, you know, with science, we can see a buildup of studies suggesting reason for concern, but there's no real smoking gun.
All right. Well, Tiffany Carey, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.
And this segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.